Oh my God, you guys, Rural K has everything.
Oh yeah, man, I can't believe the finds I got today. I got an economy-sized bag of grass seed and a bottle of biscuits and gravy-flavored soda.
They got a whole wall of Larry the Cable Guy chips over here.
I know, I found deep-fried chocolate stuffed hot dog.
Damn, ooh. That sounds amazing.
Did you guys see this bin of DVDs over here?
What? Oh my God, Machine Gun Jesus special edition with commentary by Podcast Rob and James Hatton of the Something Something cast. I'm buying it.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Something. We get to hijack your brain.
Something.
Okay, here we go. Welcome once again. It is time for another episode of the Something Something Cast.
Something Something Cast.
I'm James Hatton.
I'm Podcast Rob.
And we have a full episode for everyone. Da-da-da. Da-da-da.
Yeah, it's not those. It's our episodes do not settle during shipping.
Yeah. Oh, we opened up the podcast and they said it was an hour and a half, and it's just 10 minutes.
38 minutes of bullshit. Well.
Mm.
Yeah, we can't. Yeah, we probably will have 38 minutes of bullshit in this one too. So
that's fair. We've already started.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, I've been thinking about it because we've been doing the Patreon episodes, and I know when you and I had started doing the Patreon ones, we were like, we'll do little 5-10 minute things. Like if you know, we do a movie review here, we'll do something, you know, a quick back and forth there, and they've turned into full episodes in the last few of them. They've been like half hour here, 45 minutes there.
Yeah. The only ones that have been the short ones have been our radio drama episodes, but that's because they're scripted at that length.
Yeah.
So.
The rest of it, you and I just like babbling at each other.
Right. You know, since you've mentioned our Patreon.
There you go.
You, fine listeners, can go to patreon.com/somethingsomethingcast, and for a mere $2 a month, I know, we lowered the price.
What?
$2 a month gets you 2 weeks worth of exclusive content, the off weeks that we don't offer our regular for free podcast, and you get to help support the show.
A value at 3 times the price.
Absolutely. Do some pretty awesome stuff.
Yep. But yes, we dropped the price 33%.
Because
we wanted to.
Who does that?
I don't know. 33%? Doesn't that cut into our wholesale values of these episodes? I don't know how this works.
I want to throw something else out there for the people listening.
Of course.
Because this will go up before the Super Bowl, like the Tuesday before the Super Bowl.
Yes, it will.
Which is February 5th. If you would like another way to help support the podcast, if you go to the following website, monkeysfightingrobots.com, we are entered into the Amateur Podcast Championships. And there is a link on monkeysfightingrobots.com that says podcasts and meet the podcasts. You can scroll down till you find our entry, the Something Something Cast, because they're also doing a Vote for People's Choice Award. So if you want to help get our name out there and you want to help support the podcast.
And you are allegedly people.
You are. From all of our intelligence reports, you are, in fact, people. Monkeysfightingrobots.com, hit the podcast, scroll down to Something Something Cast, give us a vote, give us a listen, help spread the love, get our name out there, and help support the show.
And it was an honor just to be nominated.
We put ourselves in that.
All right.
I mean, I'm just saying, it wasn't like...
I know, somebody, I don't remember who, it was like a family member. Saw on my Facebook that I had posted the Monkeys vs. Robot link, and they sent me a private message. Congratulations, you guys were nominated. And my brain went, should I tell them? Nah, let them think I'm cool. Because it was family. If it was somebody, if it was like one of our fans or friends or whatnot, I would have told them immediately. But since it was a family member, I'm like, ah, they can think them.
I know you don't watch sports ball.
I don't. Not so much.
But there was one team this year that only in the NFL that only scored one win. And it was their next to last game.
Okay.
So embracing their terribleness and the fact that the fans of 31 other teams were basically completely ragging on them, they entirely and comically embraced the participation trophy mentality.
Nice.
And you could go, like, on their website, front page, big, huge banner, buy Cleveland Browns gear, and there were t-shirts and hats that said NFL game winner. And it had a big one in the middle of it. Like, instead of number one, it was like, we won a game. I was like, you know what? Bravo, guys.
Yeah, that's great. They're doing
so,
the,
yeah, we should do that. We're gonna come up with a... I should make a t-shirt that says, we were nominated, parentheses, by ourselves.
Yes. Similar, not only vaguely related to the sports ball. I was listening to Chris Jericho, the pro wrestler. He has a podcast, Talk is Jericho.
Right.
They're doing a 30 for 30 on ESPN about the XFL. For those who don't know, the XFL was the Smash Mouth football league that Vince McMahon started with Dick Ebersol. So his Dick Ebersol's son is doing – he did a 30 for 30 on ESPN, got everybody to talk about it because obviously it's Vince McMahon and Dick Ebersol, who's
sure.
his father and family friends, you know. So, and he apparently goes really in depth. Like, it's not a sort of light, fluffy piece. I'm looking forward to hearing it, having heard some of the stories that went on as to why the XFL kind of bombed. But if you're looking for a good, you know, 45 minutes to hear about Vince McMahon trying to take on NFL, really great interview. It's over on Talk is Jericho.
Well, I mean, this isn't what the episode's about, but I can give you two reasons right off the top of the bat.
Please.
One was they started trying to do the NFL, the WWF production thing by doing, like, in the locker room interviews / skit / vignettes mm-hmm. with the cheerleaders and with the players. And people started thinking, well, we know wrestling is scripted and fake. Does that mean that the football games are all scripted and fake, too, and that they're just predetermined and, you know, we're playing along? That was a big badness.
Sure.
And then the New York, New Jersey Hitmen, which was our local team, when they first came out, there was kind of a big to-do about the XFL. It was kind of cool. It was different. It was a little bit more hardcore, a little bit more... You know, I want to say violence-oriented, sort of.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
They,
player
they were...
safety wasn't necessarily on the forefront.
Yeah, exactly.
But when they did sideline interviews, they also piped those interviews through the speakers in the stadium. So the New York, New Jersey Hitmen quarterback was doing pretty terrible his first three games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, horribly terrible. And the fans were booing him like crazy and, you know, chanting for the backup. And
okay.
during halftime, they went over and they asked him, and they said, well, how do you feel about having your hometown fans boo you? And he said, honestly, I don't give a crap what they think. They're not the quarterback of this team. I am. I know I have a job later on. What about them? And, like, the next week,
God.
The New York Times, the Star Ledger, any place that had a sports grid
mm-hmm.
that showed the games for the Mets, Yankees, Jets, Giants, you know, Rangers, Islanders, and Hitmen. The Hitmen were no longer in that box, and they got almost no media coverage after that. Because, well, fuck this guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And they weren't in huge media markets. They were in, like, third-tier media markets
yeah.
in better than half their teams. They only had eight teams in the league. So apart from a team in California... the LA Extreme, and apart from the New York, New Jersey Hitmen, and maybe the Chicago team, everybody else was like, you know, Birmingham, Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Vegas had a team. I think there was.
Yeah, they weren't, but they weren't big media markets.
No.
You lose one of your two huge ones, you're done.
And they go. He went into pretty good detail as to, like the I guess the first night there was two games happening simultaneously, and so they had to
yep.
pick which one they thought was going to be the better one, and they
yep.
chose the bad one.
Yes.
And then the next week there was like a there was a blackout. Like there was a the stories that go on. It's you clearly have some appreciation of the XFL. You will love this interview.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I was kind of a big fan of the XFL. I thought it was fun and entertaining to watch, sometimes in a train wreck kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
But they did do a lot of stuff that got picked up later on. Like, they kind of
they
perfected
said
the whole aerial trash can cam, the mm-hmm. one that's on all the cables that can basically hover over anywhere on the football field. And that's a staple of any NFL production right now, and that basically came from the XFL.
So before we get to the episode, there's one more little anecdote of this, because I find it very funny about it's probably my favorite little clip of this XFL story. Is so Vince wants to get a cameraman on the field. He wants one to be down there.
Okay.
And so he goes to the NBC cameraman, because they're the ones running the cameras. So I need one of you guys to go out on the field and do that. And the NBC cameraman goes, fuck you, no. That's not what we do, and that's really dangerous. No. I mean, I'll do it, but you're going to have to pay me blah, blah, blah more money. And Vince goes, look, I've been doing this sort of live, dangerous coverage for years. I have a guy named Bubba. Bubba works for me. Bubba will go anywhere. He'll go in a steel cage. He'll go in the middle of a match. He'll go wherever you need him to go. I'm going to call Bubba. So he calls Bubba, tells Bubba the situation, says, all right, so Bubba, you're going to do this? He goes, like hell I'm doing that. No. Vince goes, why? And he explains pretty much the exact same thing the NBC guy told him.
Sure.
And so he goes, oh, I guess I have to pay my cameraman more.
Nice.
All right. So, talking about things that have died.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice. Although these haven't come back.
That's true. The XFL has not made any sort of triumvirate return to face off against that which has slain it.
Which has defeated it.
Today's episode is one we've been sort of banking on that we knew we'd have available to us in our pockets. It is The Crow.
Yeah, we're talking about The Crow franchise here.
We're talking specifically the movies. I haven't. Have you read any of the comics?
Well, I read the original comic.
Okay.
Well, I should say I read it when it was a graphic novel.
Right.
The collected works by James Amar.
I've read a couple of the others because he's written, I want to say, I mean, now it's probably up to 10 of them. But he's written a few other Crow stories.
Okay.
One of which, I'm going to look it up while we're doing it. I think it's called Iron and Wine.
Okay.
Where the Crow is a woman. Her name's, I'm going to say Iris or Lily. It's definitely a flower.
Right.
And it's probably the best one that I read out of all of them. They're all a little different. All of them are better than all of the movies. But, yeah, this isn't going to be at all the comics and stuff. This is going to be specifically the movies. Because there's four of them.
Yeah, we're going to rank them best to worst.
Yeah. We can do that. So, first off, let's talk about The Crow.
Okay.
Because have you ever dressed as The Crow for Halloween?
I absolutely have.
I, too, have dressed as The Crow for Halloween. This is the classic sort of 90s thing to do.
It was. And I actually won a costume contest where I dressed as The Crow, and my girlfriend was in a white cat suit with cat ears and a tail and a collar and leash, and she went as Gabriel.
Funny. Very nice.
And I am completely 100% convinced that it was because of her we won the costume contest.
I'm trying to imagine this. If you have any pictures, please send them.
You know, I don't. No.
So did you see it in the theater? Like, give me your Crow experience, because then I'll give you
I
mine.
Did. I saw the first one in the theater, absolutely. I went probably a couple days after it had come out. It wasn't like an opening night kind of thing. But It was what you would expect for a movie like that based on a comic book like that mm-hmm. in the mid-90s theater environment.
Sure.
So, it wasn't like your current Marvel or DCU theaters where it was like a wide swath cross-section of society, comic book people and superhero people and movie people, and, you know, it was It was your fans of the comic book, your art majors, and your goths.
Yep.
Were basically the cross-section of society that went to see this movie.
And they all were outside smoking right after the film.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I saw it in the theater. For some reason, my brain doesn't have it there. But it definitely, I mean, I had the poster. It came out right at the right time. I was 15 when it came out, so it was the exact right time for me to be, oh, so very in tune with it. And I was already listening to Nine Inch Nails and, oh, Hey Nice Lunchbox.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it definitely hit the mark with me and the buddies that I chilled with at the time. So I had my trench coat in high school. Like I was one of those kids. I was somewhere between. I was like a hybrid mix of artsy, nerdy comic book one. I wasn't as much gothy, but everybody thought I was.
Right.
Because I wore black. But yeah, I probably liked it.
Well,
you had the black.
Excuse me. You had the black. Clothes ensemble.
Yeah.
And at the time I knew you back then, when we were both working at the Renaissance Festival, you did kind of sort of have that scene haircut.
I did. It was just long.
So that's
and
why
stringy.
Immediately people would look at you in the trench coat and the hair and go, oh, goth. Okay.
Yeah.
But you didn't have the nail polish and the lipstick and, you know, the eyeliner that ended in a curly Q at the corner of your eye kind of thing.
No, I didn't do any of those things. And like, the shirts were, like, Boris Vallejo art. And, like,
yeah,
Louis...
exactly. But nobody looked at the art.
Like, right.
Just, oh, look, it was some sort of artistic thing on a black T-shirt.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I loved the first movie. I'm sure I've seen it 100 times.
Oh, easy.
It was just the thing that you'd throw in the background while everybody was playing role-playing games or magic or whatever you were doing at the time.
We did a live tweet episode of it not too long ago.
Our show did?
Yeah.
Huh.
You were fantastic.
I hate that I miss them because it's always there on Saturday nights. I gotta find less to do. Saturday's always such a bitch.
I think this was on a Thursday.
Damn it.
That's okay. You don't listen to our podcast. Why would I expect you to show up to a live tweet?
I'm going
to
tell you, I've listened to the podcast more in the last month, and I think the quality has been up there. So
you weren't even at the Ocean's 12 live tweet we did.
I know. I miss
that. That was the most recent one, and I needed you because Stevens was on me.
So the Crow soundtrack.
Yeah. Oh, okay. The Crow soundtrack was, for your generation, what the Lost Boys soundtrack was for mine.
Oh, what a great comparison. What a fantastic comparison. Because, yeah, you have The Cure, you have Machines of Love and Grace, Stone Temple Pilots, Nine Inch Nails, Rage Against the Machine, etc., etc. And I know for a fact that at least Machines of Love and Grace and My Life at the Thrill Kill Cult, I discovered because of this soundtrack. And I went on to become really big fans of them. So it was, you are 100% correct. It was just a constant, hey, look, this is sort of a, I don't know, it was a pick and mix of like the best of industrial and heavy metal at the time.
It was, but if you also, I mean, if you look at the type of movie that The Crow was and the type of people and crowds that it brought, not only to see it, but that made it like the cult classic that it is. And you look at the Lost Boys and look at the same groups, you know, the people who saw it in the theater, the people who own it, the people who made it the cult classic that it is. They're it's the same group. It's just that they've gotten 10 years younger or they've aged 10 years, depending on which way you want to slide the scale.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of cross section of people, just plus or minus 10 years.
I'd probably put The Craft in that same soundtracky movie thing.
Yeah, but I don't think that soundtrack from The Craft had the same kind of impact that the soundtrack from The Crow and that Lost Boys did.
Fair.
I'm not saying it wasn't as good.
No, it's
and that
good,
it didn't but... kind of go by the same, I don't want to say cookie cutterness of, you know, because almost every movie soundtrack does that. I mean, Tank Girl is kind of the same way. If you look at their soundtrack, it's that the cross-section of that kind of music of the time.
Sure.
But it did. I don't think it had the impact that the Crow soundtrack and that the Lost Boys soundtrack did.
You make a fair point. So what do we, I mean, so we can talk, we could go right to the next movie, but there's so much, like, there's like a lot to unpack out of this movie.
Well, so the first one, here's the thing I want to bring up about the first one.
Hit it.
If you've seen it on Netflix, if you've seen it on, you know, DVD, in the theater, whatever, great movie. It doesn't necessarily follow the comic book.
Yeah, no, I don't even know whether Jailbar liked the movie.
Except in tone. A lot of the characters aren't even named in the movie, although it does have Michael Wincott as, you know, the guy who's supposed to be top dollar, and he's fantastic. The way he delivers his lines are just...
He found himself perished.
There's, well, that's... No, that's the other guy.
That's Fun Boy.
Yeah, no, that's not Fun Boy. That's...
I got him listed up here.
It's That's not Fun Boy.
It's not T-Bird. Tintin?
It is T-Bird.
T-Bird? Okay.
T-Bird, yeah. T-Bird is the guy from The Warriors.
Gotcha. Yes. Okay, that is
him. David Patrick Kelly. No, Michael Wincott is the guy who also played Guy of Gisborne and also played Cyclops, the villain in Three Musketeers.
Okay.
But just like one of my favorite lines he delivered, and it's kind of such a throwaway line, when they're talking about Fun Boy getting killed, and his bodyguard is like, he had a guitar. He winked at me before he jumped out of a four-story window. And he goes, he winked at you? Musicians. And it, like, it's just such a throwaway line, but the way he delivers it just kind of shows that he doesn't give one single fuck about this dude. But if you... I owned it on VHS when it first came out. So if you've seen the VHS version or you have the DVD version and you've watched the whole thing, then you have probably seen the absolute creepiest thing about that movie, which is most of them have Brandon Lee's final on-camera interview tacked on at the end of the movie. Have you seen this?
If I did, it wasn't during this viewing of it, so yeah, please.
Oh, he sits down with, I almost want to say it's like Entertainment Weekly,
okay,
and they're talking to him about the character. And he mentions stuff like, and this has never aired before, because it was kind of a promo interview that they were doing for when the movie was going to be released, and then he died while filming it, so like they kept it under wraps. So he's talking about how like he's done a lot of movies that had violence in it, but he does not think that any movie that he has done that has violence in it ever had the violence so warranted as it did in The Crow. Because nobody can say how they would act or what they would do or how they would behave were something like this to actually be able to happen. And the part that kills me is because he goes into this thing that says, because we do not know when we are going to die, we get to think of life as an inexhaustible well, and yet everything happens only a certain number of times, and a very small number really at that. How many times will you remember a certain afternoon of your childhood? An afternoon that is so deeply a part of your being that you can't conceive of your life without it. Perhaps four? Perhaps five times more? Maybe not even that. How many times will you watch the full moon rise? Maybe 20, yet it all seems limitless. And to hear that coming from a guy who we know is no longer with us because of a tragic accident that nobody was expecting.
Sure.
Was really just kind of a fucked up period on the end of a movie that talks about a guy who gets killed and comes back from the dead to right wrongs. It was really deep. Like, I was probably in my early 20s when I picked it up on VHS. And you watch that for the first time, and that's a gut punch.
I had to have seen it. I'm sure I've seen it. I Because that's, like I said, I was... Ugh.
Yeah.
I remember... And I think that's probably why another reason, for as sad and morbid as it is, the movie has its cult status, or a certain aspect of its cult status. And that's because when you walked into this movie knowing Brandon Lee passed away during it.
Oh, yeah.
You very well might know even the scene in which it happened, because it's, mm-hmm. it's a pretty big scene. So him playing a guy who died, came back to life, etc. It adds, whether or not it has nothing to do with his acting ability, you've imprinted that on him already.
Yep.
So it becomes a much more tragic character.
And it's even worse because of whose kid he was.
Yes.
And
so
the whole, you know, death curse about their family kind of thing. It didn't help the fact that he got killed in the scene that his character gets killed in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like a motorcycle accident stunt or something gone awry in some other point of the film. No. Hey, it's the film in which your character gets shot and died that he got shot and killed.
Yeah.
It's... Yeah, and even that whole thing had its own weird final destination set of circumstances that came just before it happened. And yet that changed the entire industry afterwards on how those scenes and those props get handled.
Yeah. It's and then adding final of that, this was only Brandon Lee's, I don't know, it was, he had done less than a half a dozen movies.
Right.
He was really just on, his star was only beginning to on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably, you know, he was not too shabby.
No, so, not at all.
So it is also, you know, it adds that you kind of, it's similar to Heath Ledger in that you look and you're like, you know, you had some good in there. You probably could have been a whole lot bigger. And this just, this is the last you're going to get of it.
He was uncredited in Crime Killer in 85, played a minor character in Legacy of Rage and Laser Mission, played a medium character in Showdown in Little Tokyo, and then was kind of one of the main characters in Rapid Fire. But all of those are basically like kung fu martial arts action movies.
Sure.
He had a cameo in Sex, Lies, and Video Violence, and then he did The Crow, and that was it.
So this was his first The Thing.
Yeah, and James O'Barr actually wasn't crazy about him being cast in the part, because the only thing he knew him from was Showdown in Little Tokyo. And he was afraid that it was going to end up becoming kind of this martial arts action fantasy kind of movie thing that was going to get released straight to video. And then he shows up one day on set and sees him in the leather pants and the shirt with the electrical tape and the duct tape and the trench coat and the makeup and everything, and was like, holy fuck, this is going to be awesome. Like, he completely fell for it. Brandon Lee, he hated the way his makeup was done because he felt it was too good when he came out of the makeup department. So he struck a deal with James O'Barr and the director, and he would put his own makeup on the day before, and he would wear it, and then he would go to sleep in it, and then
Got
he
it.
Would wake up in it and go to set. So it looked like it was kind of fucked up and ragged and wearing off and stuff like that, because he felt... You know, a guy who's been through all this and basically applied the makeup once, it
sure.
shouldn't look, you know, fucking makeup room perfect every time.
That's fair. And
yeah,
there is...
no, it was a really good movie and probably quite easily the best of the whole group.
Yeah, that's why we started talking about it first, because it is
yep.
With our both of our tops. There are some themes that will be replicated. I mean, the concept of The Crow is someone dies wrongly, usually, or 90, I think all of the cases, with a loved one, and or because of a loved one, somehow related to a loved one, they come back to avenge theirs and their loved one's wrongdoer.
Yep.
They have a totemistic crow that... as we move into the second movie, plays a bigger part. And everything else is sort of, nah, we'll figure it out. Because then we get to Crow 2.
Yeah, is this the second best on your list?
Second best, yeah. I'm going to tell you right now, when this movie came out, this is where the problem with this,
we have four movies, and my list is number one, and then the other three are kind of tied for ninth.
Yeah. The girl I was dating at the time goes, Jamie, you have to see Crow 2. And I'm like, I really don't want to. I find it horrible that they redid it. I was really
Please tell
of...
me this is why she's your ex.
No.
Ugh.
But so she goes, just watch it. She was going out with girlfriends that night. She was like, just sit, watch it. I rented it. It's there.
I rented it for you. I'm not even going to stay here and watch it with you.
Well, she had already seen it.
Right.
So I watch it, and she comes back, and she goes, so what'd you think? And I'm like, I hated it. It was garbage. It was yellow.
Yeah, it really was.
The movie is so yellow. The whole thing's sodium lit. And now, anytime I see a movie that is sodium lit like that, I have two thoughts. One, it reminds me of The Crow 2, and two, it immediately makes me think of a cheap, shitty movie, because it usually is.
Yeah.
Yeah, the problem is we're starting at movie number two, and I'm already beginning to loathe.
Nice. So, just to real quick, the first one had a budget of $23 million, made about $51 million at the box office.
Sure.
So at least it made its money back. Again, was that partially because of the stigma around it and people wanted to go see it?
Definitely.
Probably. Is it its longevity because of that? Probably.
I would say it plays a lesser factor on that, but it definitely is one. It's undeniable.
Yeah. Wow. I just realized. You ever do research for this show, for an episode that we're doing, and as we're recording, you notice one little tidbit that suddenly makes 50 other pieces of a much bigger jigsaw puzzle suddenly make sense?
Is it the name Jeff Most?
It is not the name Jeff Most.
Oh, okay. What's yours?
No, it's the fact that the screenplay for this movie was done by David S. Goyer.
Hmm.
Isn't he also the guy who did Batman Superman?
Yeah, I believe he is.
Yeah.
Well, fine.
That's funny. To me, it just means that, the steaming pile of horseshit that Batman Superman was not just something that happened to him that day.
Right. It wasn't a lark. He's got a
Well, he co-wrote scripts for Dark Knight Rises and Man of Steel. All
right.
And then he did a 4-week rewrite for Godzilla. I thought for sure he was involved in... Oh, yeah, no. Goyer co-wrote Batman vs. Superman.
So, the name of the first Crow is Eric Draven, which is...
Correct.
Sort of charming and cutesy, Eric D. Raven, meh, meh, meh. By the second movie, his name is Ash Corvin.
Mm-hmm.
Little less subtle. Slightly less. There's a theme as we move forward. I think the thing about Corvin that I really hate, or just don't like, I don't get him. He's got a vaguely Euro trashy British accent. He's a motorcycle repairman. He quotes and quips a little really, really quickly. There's no depth. I just don't feel there's any depth to him.
There were a lot of problems I had with this movie.
Please, I'll join in as we go.
First of all, the fact that it was made.
That's fair.
No, seriously. The problem was that I'm sure that the original plan was, hey, if this one takes off, we want to do more Crow movies with Brandon Lee. And then, the Brandon Lee thing happens, and they give it some time, but of course, the movie industry is a business, and they want to make their ducats. So eventually, somebody goes, well, hey, what about that Crow thing? And somebody else goes, oh, that's a great idea. And it doesn't matter how many other people go, no, that's a terrible idea. The minute one other person says, hey, that's a great idea, the snowball starts rolling down the hill.
Mm-hmm.
They so unabashedly tried to capture lightning in a bottle twice in the tone.
Yes.
In the... they could have done so many things. It was cool and interesting in the first movie when Draven kind of left his calling card, either the crow drawn in blood on the wall or, you know, the iconic scene of him squirting the lighter fluid and then throwing the lighter down and watching that crow just burn its way out in fire. So in this one, they have to come up with more cheeky, stupid shit like that. And, like, the biggest one I can think of is when, is it this one where... No, it might have been Fun Boy, where he had the needles stuck in his chest in the crow
that's,
outline.
That's
but in this one, Iggy Pop dies, or he's dying.
Yes.
He's having a hard time breathing, and he throws him in the river. And there are, like, these girls out of nowhere just, like, throwing flowers off this bridge trestle into the river. And the flowers somehow form the outline of a crow and stay that way as they float down a river. It was...
The... Iggy's quotes. I literally wrote down in my notes here under curve, "Fuck you, bird dick."
Yeah.
Here's my problem with Iggy Pop. Not a point in the movie. Not so much Iggy Pop as an actor. That speaks for itself.
Yeah.
He gets upset with Sarah. This is the one tether it has to the first movie, that the young girl in the first movie is now a sort of hot gothy tattoo artist.
Mia Kirshner.
Yep. He goes and he visits her, and he's upset that she's tattooed this crow on his chest. You have tattoos.
Yes.
I have tattoos.
Yes.
Have you ever walked out of a tattoo parlor going, I wonder what it looks like under there?
Well, no, but here's the thing. It was one of those, like, M.C. Escher kind of things, where it was, wasn't it like two things fighting each other, but the poses she put them in when they met, just the out, it blatantly made a crow image.
Right.
But if you looked at it, it was two other things that are decidedly not crows engaged in some sort of battle to the death. But yeah, dude, when you leave a barber shop, he holds a fucking mirror up and goes, hey, is this cool? You know, at what point do you not go, hey, wait a minute. And it's not like it was outside of his eyesight.
Right, exactly.
You know,
fucking
chest. He wasn't like a super fat guy and she did it on the inside of his thigh and, well, I'm never going to be able to see what that looks like.
It was
on his fucking chest. Dude's like 40 pounds.
He's Iggy Pop.
All he's going to do is look down.
He could shine a light through him.
Yeah. Here, hold this flashlight up to my back. I want to see what my tattoo looks like.
I have a bullet list of things that were clearly decisions to make this movie gother.
Okay.
Because The Crow happens on Halloween. This movie's on Dia de los Muertos. The drug dealer, big bad villain, whose name's Judah. Of course he is.
Oh.
He's not selling... We'll get there. He's not selling cocaine. He's selling some mysterious crack thing that they never really get into. It's just imprinted. In the last movie, you had the magic Asian girl. Now you have blind fucking Mab. And in the last movie, it wasn't the fire of the crow. It's the blood pooling out of the shapes. The blood pools out of the one dead guy's head. I don't remember which guy that dies, but his head is like he split his head open or got shot or something.
Yeah.
The blood pools in the shape of a crow.
Yeah. But the fire was cool because that wasn't just like it somehow mysteriously happened.
Right.
He fucking walked that pattern with the lighter fluid.
Yeah, exactly.
This was stupid.
And the last point I have about this, the scene in which the sort of jump on the table and get shot by 1,000 guys scene.
Right.
Now is at the bondage club.
Yeah.
And if I remember, they just all sort of like, out of nowhere, hey, look, we all have guns. Brekka, brekka, brekka. It was all very stupid.
Yeah.
I have one major point about this movie, and I was saving it for the end because it's something I didn't remember existing, and I've asked two people who have seen this movie and they didn't remember how bad this was.
Okay.
The end sequence. Did you rewatch this episode, this movie? You can say no, it's fine.
I was going to pull them all up on Netflix, but the only one they have currently is the original one. And I know I have, like, the three-box DVD set, but I couldn't...
That's fine.
I know it sounds bad because we're doing an episode about it, but whatever. I couldn't be bothered to dig out the DVDs from wherever they're stored just to watch City of Angels and Salvation.
I don't mind carrying the load on this one. I watched three of the four of them in the last
Most of them are ingrained in my head because a lot of shit that goes on in the Bondage Club is very kind of Max Headroom-ish too.
Yes.
Like the way it's filmed, stuff will be going along normally and then it gets that kind of off to the side kind of thing to make it seem like more mysterious and quirky and weird and not of this regular common culture kind of thing.
So his fight with Judah, they hurt the bird because now
that fucking name, I swear to God.
Yeah.
It's my biggest beef with this. Out of all the terrible things, that's like the one thing that sticks in my fucking craw the most. But go ahead, I'll get to it.
Yeah. So Blind Mabs, she knows that if you kill the bird, you kill the man. So they capture the bird, they hurt him. I'm asking, and please say you don't remember. If you don't, what is the fight that takes place between our villain and our crow? I'm going to tell you right now. It happens during the De Los Muertos parade.
Right.
To which there's hundreds of people just kind of standing there watching this happen, like,
I know I'll remember it and that's go, fine. Oh, yeah, that big, thing, when you say it, but it's not coming to me.
But, you know, of course, let's all hundreds of us, while we're marching for this sacred holiday, let's watch a man beat the snot out of another man in the middle of the parade. Tee-hee, funsies. Now let's watch the big, tall, muscular black guy hang the white man and whip him.
Oh, yes.
I watched this.
Was he whipping him with a chain?
I don't remember what he was whipping him with, but I do remember watching going, this is vaguely offensive.
Was there lightning that came in involved in this?
No, the lightning was with when they were on the roof earlier or something. This is very specifically the end, because then all of the crows, because he's about to die, all the crows, like, I don't know, dive bomb through him and
that's
into
what it was.
Judah. But the whipping scene is so, I mean, maybe it's I can't even think, I was thinking, like, is this because we live in a more modern sensibility? And I went, no, this is batshit insane. Yeah. Such a bad movie.
It sadly, this didn't end up on our unfortunate final movies episode that we did.
Oh, true, and it is
because
one.
For those people who remember the old school original Power Rangers, this was the Yellow Ranger Thoi Trang's final movie before she died in a car accident. Okay, so I was kind of enthused. The only thing that kind of enthused me about it was, oh, Sarah is in this movie too. So this could be kind of cool even if it's a different person, that she still kind of recognizes the quote-unquote spirit of the crow doing this again, and she can kind of help guide this guy because she's seen it before. And it turned out nothing like that. The villain's name in this movie is Judah Earl.
Okay.
The actor who plays this also played a villain in the TV show Firefly named Jubal Early.
I didn't know he was Jubal.
I swear to Christ, this is the biggest bit of fucking seriously?
Yeah.
That hits me about this movie. As bad as it is, it was bad in a, You know what? Strike that whole statement. I was going to say it was at least bad in a creative way, but it wasn't bad in a creative way because everything they did tried to mimic or mock or take what the first movie did
yes.
and move it a half inch to the left or a half inch to the right to be different. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't fucking different. So it shouldn't shock me at this stage of the game in any way, shape, or form that they just said, oh, what did you do before this? Oh, I played a guy in a sci-fi show called Jubal Early. Excellent. We'll call this guy, just take a letter off of each name. It just, if for some reason, it just stupidly bugs the fuck out of me. And now I'm looking at it, I didn't even realize Thomas Jane was in this movie.
Oh, yes, 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 he was.
I'm going to have to stop looking at him like a decent actor. We were just talking on Twitter the other day about how Marvel fucked up the Punisher 3 times before they got it right. And I said, whoa, Thomas Jane wasn't terrible. Well.
Now he is. Ho hum.
And look at that. I mean, okay, the first one you had Top Dollar, you had Tintin, you had T-Bird. You got Curve, Nemo, and Spider Monkey. It's a fucking zoo.
Oh, yeah, and I believe the blind Mab character's name Sybil.
Yes.
Yeah. Ugh.
And the Deftones as themselves.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I might actually move this movie as worse than the next one, because the next one at least tries to be different.
I think I'm with you on it. And in the third one was
Salvation.
Yeah, but it was they did something different with it.
Yes.
In the first one, he comes back, he sees the mask kind of hanging on the mirror. And that's where he gets the face makeup for it. Like, there's no other explanation for it other mm-hmm. than he sees the comedy and tragedy masks with that kind of makeup on it. In this one, doesn't she paint the makeup on him in City of Angels?
Yes.
So that's where he gets the makeup because she had seen it before, so she kind of does that to recreate it. In this one...
Salvation.
Yeah, Salvation. It was an electric chair kind of thing.
Yes.
And they were like burn marks.
Oh, I was going to comment that he's got the Clark Kent thing where half the people in the movie don't recognize him.
Yeah.
And I the first person, I'm like, oh, maybe they just never met up. And then the next person, I'm like, maybe they just never met up. And then by the end, I'm like, all right, fucking somebody, come on, just go. It takes them all like 5 minutes to go, hey, you're the guy we just fried in the electric chair.
Yeah.
There is one thing about Salvation that I would like to note very quickly and early on.
Okay. Because
maybe thinking back, you'll... This movie felt like it was a script that somebody wrote that was going to be like a dirty cop film.
Mm-hmm.
Where they went, shit, we need a script for a Crow movie. And then they just, like, added some superpowers. Because it's almost a procedural.
Necessarily know that it was just kind of augmented. Unless it was sitting around for a while. Because the first one came out in 94. Second one came out in 96, only 2 years later. Mm-hmm. This one came out in 2000.
Yeah, it's... It has a lot where you could replace Alex Corvus, to be less subtle.
Yeah.
It seems like you could replace Alex Corvus with some like dirty Harry Punisher style Avenger character, and not much would nearly need to be changed in the script.
Well, the only reason I say that I don't believe so is because this was supposed to have a wide theatrical release. But it was canceled by the distributor after City of Angels' negative critical reception. Which, again, seems kind of weird. It's 4 fucking years after the first one came out. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you'd have a good fucking idea that the second one was terrible. So why wait until after it's filmed and when you're trying to set up the release area to say... Well, you know, 4 years ago, that other one shit the bed, so maybe we'll just release it in, like, 15 theaters. Why make it at all at that point?
Well, yeah. I mean, the only reason I could imagine they did it was because they had some name value in there. Like, there's some names in this movie, surprisingly, especially when you compare it to the other two.
There is a funny bit of connectivity, me personally, between this movie and the next movie.
Between three and four?
Yeah.
Okay, because this one has Kirsten Dunst.
Right.
It has Fred Ward,
right,
who's a great character actor. It's got William Atherton, a.k.a. Yes, That Man Has No Dick.
Yep.
You know, there's a bunch of people in this movie you go, hey, I know that guy from that thing. And Walton, a young Walton Goggins.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when I saw that in the IMDb, I went, no shit, I didn't know he existed prior to Sons of Anarchy. But yeah,
Who did he play in Sons?
He was the trans
prostitute.
Oh,
yes.
That was the first thing I really recognized him as a person, you know, and now he's one of those guys that I see, I'm like, oh, he's been a character actor forever.
Yeah. I saw Sons, I said, I know him from like three other things. I just couldn't for the life of me know what those were, but I knew that I had seen him in other stuff. Yeah, the name just didn't connect between the two.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's funny because Eric Mabius plays Alex Corvus in this one, and it's hysterical because I'm constantly in my brain for some reason getting Eric Mabius and David Boreanaz confused.
Ah.
So it's humorous that one's in this movie and one's in the next movie, because in my brain they're just fucking interchangeable, and I have no idea why. Like, I literally don't know where that came from.
I've got a couple of those. They just happen.
Yeah.
He's got a similar enough, you know, pretty guy face,
I guess.
Looking, I didn't realize that. I mean, I'm only looking at his IMDb as we're talking, and I was like, oh, it's the dude from Cruel Intentions. Okay. Yeah, that's like the only thing I really know him from other than Ugly Betty.
But other than the fact that, yeah, this was like a group of corrupt cops and not some sort of motorcycle gang or, you know, massive underworld mafia thing, and the fact that the crow pattern was done because the police station got hit with lightning when he was getting electrocuted, there wasn't a whole lot, in my opinion, that was original about this.
Which tells you that when lightning hits a electric chair death scene, magic always happens.
Okay.
Either you're going to become the crow, or you're going to turn into pure electricity and move into television shows to continue doing serial killings. See Wes Craven's Shocker.
I was just going to say, was that Shocker you're talking about?
Shocker.
Gotcha.
He's the worst. I would say that the reason this one probably still sits at number three is because he's the worst crow out of the four. Because he's just too, I don't know.
You know what movie is coming next.
Yeah, I know.
And you have the absolute balls to say that this guy is the worst crow of the four?
Hold on. All right. He's the least...
When we are done recording, Sarah, you can pack your shit and get out.
Hold on. It's because he's not... He doesn't try and play it off in any way sort of... dark and brooding and gothy and dead. While watching it, I was referring to him as Dude Crow.
Because he's not... Because his character before he died was not dark and brooding and gothy. That's where this movie tried to kind of take it out of the goth realm and kind of just put it more into the bizarre supernatural realm. I mean, the first guy was kind of a gothy, punkish musician. The second guy was, you know, one of those art major kind of guys. So they already had that kind of emo scene thing about them. This guy wasn't. It might be the brightest thing that anybody did with the Crow movie to say, hey, why are the Crows only bringing back the fucking morose people?
Because their names all sound like Crow.
Yeah, well, you know... What do we need, like, a fucking jock whose name is, you know, Melvin Blackbird Guy is his last name for the fucking crow to bring him back?
Yes, that's apparently, that is the main defining quality in what turns you into a crow. You had to have a loved one murdered under false pretenses, and your name has to some way relate to a derivation of the word crow, corvus, etc. Yeah.
Michael Avian comes back from the dead. But it was probably the most original thing that this movie did, was that we're not going to try to make it a goth guy comes back from the dead to avenge his goth girlfriend.
But at the same time, the response problem to that is that you also, just for the movie style, you don't want a guy who, during the action sequence, you would not be surprised at all if he just went, whoa. Because he has some Keanu moments.
He does, but this was... Holy Christ, does he look terrible now? Whew! I'm trying to see... I know he was in something else. Yeah, he was in the Resident Evil movie.
Okay.
Which is the other thing that I remember him from. I haven't seen anything else.
No, he's done a lot of things that people saw. Done. Other people.
But, yeah, I remembered him from Resident Evil. But, it's weird because they tried to expand away from probably the one audience base that would have paid serious money to see this in theater.
Right.
Regardless of how shitty it was. But again, it was, you know what, it was a decision that they made, and they stuck with it. So I'll give them credit for at least making a decision and sticking to their guns and saying, we're going to try to take this in a different direction. Clearly, he's not a goth, emo scene kind of guy. His character, when it was alive, wasn't that way. So it stands to reason that his crow isn't going to be that way either.
You're correct. I think the problem, they went to the other side of it.
No, sure.
Which made it seem almost comical to me at times.
Well, these are getting worse and funnier as we go.
They are. There's my favorite moment in this one is one of the dirty cops, because it's all dirty cops. The cop is sitting in the car looking around. I don't know whether he's, you know, on duty or whatever, and he gets stopped at a train light. He's kind of looking around. There's no train. And then he sees a shadow run by his window, and he kind of looks around just as the window smashes through. Our crow rips open the door and, like, punches him and slides in the car. Immediately, now crow is in driver's seat, dirty cop is in passenger seat. Magically, they did that, Matt. He slid in and shoved the guy through the car.
Right.
Teleported him to the other side of the car.
Mm-hmm.
They have their big to-do and fight and everything. And Crow gets on motorcycle to drive away with cop in tow. Moments later, not enough time for this dirty cop to call on the wire and get people down there. He is followed by a dozen cop cars and a helicopter, which he promptly blows up all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's not true. He drove the car with the dirty cop into a brick wall, which is actually kind of the best moment in the movie because it's fairly original. Like,
right.
Because Crow goes through window, Crow survives. Dirty cop goes through window, eats brick wall. But yeah, he takes the cigarette lighter from the car. He lights this car on fire so it explodes. The explosion reaches to the heavens and explodes the helicopter too.
Yeah, okay.
That is some amazing work right there.
It's funny that you say that because I forgot that scene where he's in the car with the cop and he basically just runs the car into the wall because he knows, I'm going to make it through this, but the cop won't.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't they use that exact same scene in an episode of Heroes?
Very well might have.
No, I'm might serious.
I believe you.
Didn't
don't
the cheerleader
remember Heroes.
Have that guy that was kind of like trying to date rape her, and she put him in the car and she drove the car into the wall?
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. I thought you were talking about the helicopter.
No. Yes, and then she blew up the helicopter.
So I was confused. Yes.
I want to say that was in Heroes.
That sounds very familiar. It's at least something I've seen.
Yeah. So, quick question before we move on to the piece de resistance.
Yeah, hit it.
We said we were going to focus mostly on the movies. I just do want to touch on the television show. I didn't see a whole lot of it, like, when it aired. I think I may have caught one or two episodes while I was at friends' houses. The question I have is, and it kind of makes a little bit more sense in the timeline, because like I said, the original movie, 94, and then 96 for City of Angels, 98 was Crow's Stairway to Heaven, and then 2000 was Crow's Salvation. It's like every 2 years, the bird finally gets up off his ass and brings somebody else back from the dead.
Brief,
my question is...
Hold on. Pause. Before we jump to Stairway to Heaven, because I know that's where we're heading.
Right.
There's one last point I want to address about Salvation.
Please.
And it's the other thing that makes me think this movie had a different script.
Okay.
The head dirty cop, the commissioner, whatever he is, the head muckamuck. He, out of nowhere, for no reason whatsoever, knows the rules of the Crow. When they find that Alex's body is missing... He goes, well, sometimes bodies come back. They're coming after us. That's what these bodies do. We have to find what it's linked to. And you just kind of go, wait, what? Hold on. How do you know this?
Well, because the previous two crows were in all the papers.
Of course. But that means he knows all of the lore from the two goth chicks who also knew. Anyway. Just it's a running thread through these movies.
No, that's fine. I'm going to throw this out there, too, in your defense.
Hit it.
If anybody, like any police department, any sort of law enforcement agency is going to know, you know, the rules of the Crow. I mean, we're talking maybe like Men in Black, maybe, you know, BPRD kind of thing. Not the fucking Salt Lake City Police Department.
Yeah, they deal with sister wives, not living totems.
I've come out here and I've spoken to you and your wife and your sister, and I've told both of you that I need to stop coming back out here. So Crow Stairway to Heaven starts in 98.
Starring Michael Landon.
Michael Landon? Well, very funny. No, it is starring the chairman. I will say the former chairman, Mark Dacascos.
Yes, and ripped.
Right.
Cut, ripped, abs,
but
6 weeks to Sunday.
Playing Eric Draven.
Mm-hmm.
So how does the TV show pretend the first movie doesn't exist?
I think it, having only seen, so to do my research for this, I watched about half of the first episode. It's all I had time for. I think it does the same thing that Dusk Till Dawn does in the first season is the movie or some with extra things going on. Cause I know I stopped watching right at the pawn shop scene where he goes and he gets the ring from the first movie. So I have a feeling if you were to piece it together, it is a scene for scene reproduction of the movie with a lot of extra stuff. Because all the bad guys we know and love are there. The show starts with Eric meeting Shelley, and they're on this huge, ginormous bridge, and this is the place you go when you die. And then there's, oh, but, you know, my journey isn't complete. I have to go do this, and he's in the middle of the city.
Yeah, I mean, it's shown here the first episode is described as a year after he and his fiancée were murdered, Eric returns from the dead as a supernatural avenger.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 2, he goes after the man who ordered his and Shelley's death. So that really is like the first movie.
Yeah.
Then we start getting into like weirdness. You know, episode 11, an attempt to bring back Shelley goes awry when Eric accidentally resurrects a serial killer.
Well, it looks like, I mean, they have to expand on the mythology.
Yeah, but. No. Clearly they took it in a further place than the movie did. And, I mean, you have to if you're going to do a TV show. Otherwise, you're just doing a miniseries. That's the movie, and I get that. It's just, I didn't know where this kind of fell in, I guess, the overall arc of Eric Draven.
It does do one thing that I saw that I thought was, I would have liked it, pardon me, I would have liked it if it was in the movies, if it was part of the actual Crow mythology, because he's going to be living. This isn't, you know, the Crow happens over one night. So he's going to be living in this city and doing stuff. So you see him and he looks, you know, like a normal guy walking around town. And then after he figures out that the pawn shop owner has his guitar and likely the wedding ring, he kind of, for lack of a term, crows out.
Right.
He has the visions where he sees what's happening, and then you see the lines appear on his face. It's almost like a metamorphosis. He almost were-crows.
Okay.
Which I thought was actually a really cool twist. And the special effects for being, you know, early 2000s, late 90s, not horrible, given that this is the era of, you know, every franchise gets its own TV show. This is Highlander time, this is Xena, this is Babylon 5, you know.
Right, right. Huh, I was just reading the IMDb page about the first movie, too, and there was a little bit of trivia that I wasn't aware of.
Oh, please.
With his profits from the original film, James O'Barr bought his mother a car, and he bought himself a surround sound system and donated the rest. I was really good friends with Brandon, so it just felt like blood money to me, he said at a comics convention in 2009. I didn't want to profit at his expense, and I kept that a secret for as long as I could. It's not charity if you get credit for it.
J.L. Barr seems like he's an interesting cat.
He does.
I've heard he's a bit of a grump.
I think most people in his industry can get that way, especially if you're in an industry where other people are taking your stuff and altering it. I mean,
sure,
it's kind of the same way that Alan Moore is kind of a grump. You know, I don't think he's quite to that extent.
Right.
But I have heard he's not always the cheeriest person to be around. I will say that when word of them doing a reboot to this to the whole series was coming around, he was adamantly against it, and I was kind of on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who wanted to do the reboot, like, showed up at J.O. Barr's house, like, on a Friday, like, unannounced, uninvited, just said, hey, look, I'm the guy who wants to do the Crow reboot, and I want to explain to you why. And, like, he hung out there with him for 3 days. And when he left, O'Barr was up reportedly, I totally get where he's coming from. I'm sold on it. And not only do I want to help make this happen, but I want to be like your creative assistant to help bring the vision that you're trying to pitch to me to light the way you want it to, because I'm with it.
And how interesting.
For the guy who did the original comic book to have that kind of an investment in it, I was very against a reboot of it altogether. I mean, I wasn't for any of the sequels. But when I heard that he was kind of in on it, I was like, you know what? Okay, maybe we can give this a chance. Maybe we can see where this goes. If the guy who wrote the original material is behind it, then, you know, who am I to say, no, fuck you, you don't know what you're talking about.
And now is that currently, that's a thing that's happening?
We'll get there. Let's get through
okay.
Wicked Prayer first.
Yeah, let's do Wicked Prayer. Before we do that, I did go pick it up. It's The Crow, Flesh and Blood.
Oh, yes, okay.
It's the female crow. Her name's Iris Shaw.
I think I actually have that.
I do. I have them. I know they're in one of my comic boxes.
At Wild Pig Comics in Kenilworth, New Jersey.
Very nice. That might be my copy.
No, because I know what I bought it from one of their when they had their used trades.
Oh, gotcha. But yeah, I just want to make sure everybody knew about that in case they have interest. So, The Crow,
Wicked Prayer, otherwise known as
Marcus, the movie
Eddie Crowlong.
I was
let me start by saying
yes.
When you have a movie that is part of the Crow pantheon, and let's just cover up the picture of the DVD. Let's just cover up the faces. And the three names that are across the top of the movie poster / DVD cover are Edward Furlong, Tara Reid, and David Boreanaz. if that is not a giant red fucking flag that this movie is going to be the cinematic equivalent of used baby diaper tempura.
Tempura. That's
very good. I don't know what is.
Oh. Right.
This was... I'm going to throw a fun fact.
Please keep going.
About the Crow Wicked Prayer. The Crow Salvation had a very, very limited release before it was a direct-to-video after that. They didn't want Wicked Prayer to be a strictly direct-to-video release. So in order that it doesn't have to have that direct-to-video tag kind of nailed to it and stuck all over the promotional material, it has to be released in a theater. So it had a one-week premiere at one movie theater, the AMC Pacific Palace Theater in Seattle, Washington. The only movie theater you could go see it in the theater for 5 days. So they didn't have to put on all the video boxes direct to DVD.
I like their thinking outside the box. So with the cast of the last movie, you have you have quite a few actors who have seen the road, man. They've been in like, maybe this is they need the mortgage payment, or maybe this is they owe the director a favor, or he's got pictures of their wife.
Salvation,
yeah.
Okay.
But you have Kirsten Dunst. She was young
in this movie, though. This was 2000. True.
But she's still, I mean, it's hard to judge with Kirsten Dunst because her first big film was when she was like 4 in Interview with the Vampire. But yeah, this is still pretty early, but it's still probably around the whatever the cheerleading movie is. I'd have to guess that. Anyway, I can look it up later. But you also have William Atherton. He's been all over the map. Fred Ward, fairly big name. Now we go to Wicked Prayer, where the top names, as you said, Furlong, Tara Reid, Dave Boreanaz. But you also have Tito Ortiz, the boxer, MMA fighter.
Right.
Danny Trejo. And for a hot 5 minutes in the movie, because that's all they could pay for, you have Dennis Hopper.
And what's his name?
Who did I say?
No. Dennis Hopper's character name.
Oh. fuck, where is it? Because he plays the leader of, we kid you not, because we know you've never seen this, the satanic cult. Oh, El Nino.
Yeah, exactly. Let's take Dennis Hopper out of the equation for 1 second. Yes, there are names in this cast.
Uh-huh.
One of the multitudes of problems with this movie is that the people in this movie were cast the same way Club Dead was cast by Broken Lizard. They took people. The problem I had with Club Dead was it was the same people who did Super Troopers, but they changed their character roles up. You know what I mean? So Farva wasn't the stupid guy. Farva was actually the smart guy who had it all figured out. And they, you know what I mean? They kind of changed the archetypes that they had played before.
And
so
they do that
it was
with...
terrible because nobody bought into it. It was like, well,
right.
Why the fuck is Farva playing the smart guy? It's kind of the, when you cast fucking Danny Trejo as a fucking devout Christian priest, at what point when people are reading this script are they going, what? Why is he not playing any of the fucking four horsemen? Yeah, it was...
We said that correct. The four horsemen.
Yeah, David Boreanaz, boring ass.
Boreanaz.
In this movie, fucking terrible. Luke Crash is his character's name. His nickname is Death.
And he becomes Lucifer.
Yeah.
Luke becomes...
Yeah, exactly. Lucifer. Not quite as bad as Lewis Cipher from fucking Angel Heart, but pretty fucking up there.
It's getting there, especially when our main character has a very, very... You know, thankfully, they went with a name that didn't resemble Crow at all.
No, sure.
One. Yeah.
No, it just went with tequila and bad ideas.
No, Cuervo is the fucking Spanish word for Crow.
It's also tequila.
I know. Jimmy Cuervo, which my friend pointed out to me. He goes, is the intention to call him Jim Crow? And I said, no, I don't think so.
That's fantastic, though. I hadn't thought of that. Tara Reid plays herself, basically. Terrible. It's just, this whole movie is a fucking horrid shit show. I mean,
terrible.
It really stinks of, we have to put a movie out or we're going to lose the rights. But I don't think that was the case.
I don't think
anybody was clamoring for the rights to this.
There's one special guest in this movie who appears out of nowhere, is in the movie for a hot 5 minutes, and I cannot figure out why he's in it.
Who's this?
Damon John. Damon John is the owner, creator of FUBU, the multi-billionaire who's on Shark Tank.
I was just going to say, the dude from Shark Tank?
Yes. He plays a limo driver and then the virgin that gets sacrificed.
Okay. Did not know that.
Yeah. He's got a really shitty name too. I'll have to remember his name. It's like Old Man Joe or something. It's
in this movie?
Yes.
Hang on, I'm pulling up the IMDb as we speak.
It might not be. It was definitely in the. Up there he is, Proudfoot Joe. While you are on the IMDb, feel free to click on Liz Katz.
She played Catgirl number two. Once you found the name, I canceled it out.
Yeah.
In 2011, Wicked Prayer was reissued by Echo Bridge Home Entertainment as a double feature paired up with City of Angels. The only special feature was widescreen. On September 11th, 2012, you can't make this shit up, they re-released it on Blu-ray. Why would they waste the technology?
I don't know. Once again,
double feature with City of Angels. It was already being sold at Walmart before its official release date had been reached. And no one cared.
Or noticed. So, for those unaware of this film, yes, there are four villains. Similar to the other Crow movies, our Crow goes through each of them. Is it four or is it five? Well, there's four, and there's the four horsemen, and then there's Dennis Hopper.
Right.
The difference in this one...
Oh, because David is Death, that's right.
Yeah.
The leader is Death.
This movie gives you like about a half hour before the two characters die. So you get to kind of understand the background, and it's mostly wasted film. Because if they started the movie right when they die, like all the other ones, it's the same movie.
I just realized that Jimmy Cuervo's girlfriend's name is Lily Ignites the Dawn.
Of course it is.
Oh my God.
We have the group of them, all of these bad guys who are part of a satanic cult. They all got out of prison, and they want to revenge the tribe for building a casino. And they invariably kill Mr. Cuervo and Ms. Ignites whatever, so they can gain supernatural powers. So Tara Reid gets magic eyes, and David Boreanaz get strong. Roar. All the while, note we haven't discussed the crow so much.
Because all the crow really got was fat.
Don't you remember?
I mean, he still got the annoyingly whiny voice from Terminator 2.
Yeah.
It's just coming out of a much bigger body.
Don't you remember?
Literally, fucking Edward Furlong alive looks worse than all other three crows after they've come back. It's almost like the crow put on flesh-colored makeup to just try to blend into regular society and have a normal life.
There's every line he says in this movie, he says in this sort of
whiny Eddie Furlong voice.
It's not even, some of them he tries, the other crows, I think, even the third one where he's Dude Crow, they try to have a certain amount of gravitas to it. He sits down, there's at one point he goes and he kills one of the four horses, it doesn't matter which one. And he sits down at the table that Boreanaz and Tara Reid are sitting at. And he's just sitting there and he has a conversation with them. I don't really do death so much. Like, he's got this almost, yeah, whatever, I'm dead. I'm just...
He's like the guy that fucking Christopher Walken keeps alive in what the hell is it? The Prophecy? Just to drive him around?
Yes.
Look, can we just stop this? I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to go home.
And then Dennis Hopper, who appears in the movie three quarters of the way through it for no reason whatsoever other than somebody had Dennis Hopper's phone number. They clearly said to him, look, can you just do Blue Velvet for 5 minutes? We'll film it and you can go home. Because that's what he tries to use hip lingo and it comes across very funny. He keeps calling Tara Reid shorty. And like, as in, Tara Reid is his shouty.
Yeah, I now pronounce you devil and his shorty.
Mm-hmm.
I love you, Lucifer. Well, kiss the bride, motherfucker. These are quotes from the movie. These are Dennis Hopper's lines. This is Dennis Hopper when he realizes that Boreanaz has been taken over by Lucifer. Well, wicked ass props to you, Mr. OG, and thanks for representing all the homeboys.
Do you think they had another actor in mind? Like they were trying to get Cheech Marin, and he looked at the script and said, I'm busy, call Hopper. Because it's either brilliant writing to make Dennis Hopper sound crazy, or it's horrible writing because it was supposed to be for somebody else.
Well, I think it's... I have two different options. It's either like Al Michaels' lines in Basketball, where we're just going to try to get him to say bizarre shit for the shock value of it.
Right.
Or it's like, what's his name from fucking The Island of Dr. Moreau, where he basically ignored the script and just rambled his own bullshit whenever he was on camera because he knew they didn't have the money to make him do the retakes and
right.
Who's going to fucking tell Dennis Hopper no?
Because every actor in this movie seems like they don't want to be there. Dennis Hopper included. They all just kind of sit and just...
Oh, no, David Boreanaz is all over it because he's getting paid.
It's true.
This is work for me. I'm trying to make something of this, fucker.
But this is also like David Boreanaz during his little moment. Like, David, this is 2005. Boreanaz was deep in the Angel at this point. But that's why he got this part, was because he was playing an evil vampire guy. Because when he's Lucifer, they added just enough effect to his voice. It's just put through like the filter I could put on my voice right now. I'm gonna do that in post. It's just enough gravitas, and the rest of it's garbage. Oh my god, this movie is so much fun. I want to riff tracks this movie.
It's this movie is terrible.
Yes. It cycles past so bad it's good and moves into so bad it's so bad.
Yeah.
I think I want to watch it again.
And one of the reasons I actually watched this movie was, number one, Marcus from Deadpan Fury has this picture of Eddie Furlong in the crow makeup with the crow on his shoulder as a screenshot from this movie that he just uses to meme troll people, friends on our Facebook list. So I'm
mostly
like,
us.
I have to, when it came on Netflix, I said, I have seen all the other Crow movies. I have to close it out. I have to watch this last one so I can at least, like, put the stamp on it and say, yes, I watched them all. This is just a fucking shit show. And if you're listening to us and you're going, oh my God, these guys say it's terrible, I have to check it out. This is not like that Geico commercial with all the fucking raccoons. And we're like, oh no, dude, you have to taste this. It smells like fucking, you know, baked hair and baby food. You know, we're not trying to get you to watch something because it's so awesomely bad. We are legitimately, absolutely telling you, for the love of all that's holy, do not watch this movie. It is that bad. And
I
realize that it's only going to drive many of you to try to find it more. I feel like Willy Wonka. No, stop, don't. I'm telling them not to.
Police, stop, murder. I will say that if you are the type of person that likes to gather around and watch shitty film, as I am, this is a perfect party shitty movie to, like, sit and mock.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's it. If you're going to have three or four of your friends over, order a couple of pizzas, grab a six-pack, and we're going to put on a terrible movie and just fucking make fun of it.
Yeah.
If this ever comes back on Netflix, I think this has to be a live tweet option.
It does. It does. I've seen every Tremors movie. I love the Tremors movies. I've seen all of them. The last and second to last one, they're shit shows. They're pretty garbage.
Yes.
They are Citizen Kane compared to this.
Oh, absolutely.
Ass blasters. Is part of Tremors lore.
We made a joke a couple years ago, me and some friends of mine. We always go up to New Hampshire in the spring because we have friends who live up there, theme song Chris and his wife, and they have a big barbecue for a couple days. And we joked, I was talking on Facebook when I was watching this movie about how terrible this fucking movie was. And we joked that five of us and our smartphones could film a better movie over the course of a three-day barbecue than this movie actually was.
Did you get distribution rights? Like,
actually film the movie.
Oh, okay, just checking. Because you could probably send it into Lionsgate.
And the action scenes might have been better because they actually have a zip line in their backyard.
Well, there is a moment where stuntman Eddie Furlong, because it's clearly not Eddie Furlong, because the harness, it break. He's doing the straight arm, straight legged kind of cross crow thing that other crows in prior movies have done as
right.
the that's how he flies. And he just sort of zips back and forth before landing wherever he's going to land. But the jump cuts they take, they had no dedication to anything they were doing. There's so many spots where you're like, ah, that's the last 3 seconds of the cut they thought was the best.
This movie really was filmed like a camera falling down a flight of stairs.
Yeah. Now, I will say, if you hate Tara Reid, but you like the way Tara Reid looks. This is Tara Reid when she still looked pretty Tara Reid-ish.
She's not entirely painful on the eyes in this movie.
No.
But that's probably about it. I'm trying to see if there's... Okay, I wanted to see if there was any sort of, like, budget money on this or anything. But, just... Because, like, it's gone downhill. The first movie had a, what do we say it was? It was a budget of $23 million and it made $50. The second one, I'm only seeing a box office made just under $18.
Dollars?
Million.
Oh.
The third movie had a budget of $10 million. I don't know. Oh, Salvation and Bring It On came out the same year.
There you go. Okay, so this was the thing she did before she knew Bring It On was going to be a hit. Okay.
Yeah. The Wikipedia page doesn't even have, like, budgetary or anything listed on it or how much it made. So we're just gonna go right to trivia. Most of the shots of the crow in this movie were taken from previous Crow films.
That means that the teal zipline scene is probably actually from the one previous.
Yeah. Cuervo means crow in Spanish. One of the trivia lines here.
Dennis Hopper is still playing his character from Super Mario Brothers. That's not what it says.
The trivia item below may give away important plot points. The only line below it says body count 46. Is that in the movie or the audience?
Well, that's us. That's the crow.
It really falls off a cliff after the first one.
It surely does. When we decided we were going to do this episode, part of me went, yes, we're going to do The Crow finally. And the other part of me went, crap, I have to watch a bunch of Crow movies.
Oh, so here, so let's take just a couple minutes and talk about the remake.
Oh, yes, hit it.
Originally, Stephen Norrington wanted to direct a reinvention of The Crow. He said where Proyas' original was gloriously gothic and stylized, he wanted the new movie to be realistic, hard-edged, and mysterious, almost documentary style.
Mm.
And then, of course, about 2 years after he has that interview, he steps out of the project and leaves it. 28 weeks later, director Juan Carlos Fresnadillo was supposed to take over. Bradley Cooper was in talks to play the lead.
He would make a horrible crow.
Yeah. Relativity Media had tapped Alex Tse, who co-wrote Watchmen. Cooper dropped out due to scheduling, and Mark Wahlberg who was originally in talks for the lead, again came up. Channing Tatum, Ryan Gosling, James McAvoy were rumored to be in there. James McAvoy, I would think was okay.
Yeah, he'd probably be all right.
Tom Hiddleston was rumored to play Draven. I thought that would have been okay. Alexander Skarsgård was talked about it. That wouldn't have been terrible if it was done right. 2013 Deadline reported that Luke Evans had been cast as Eric Draven. I also thought that would have been a great choice. Luke Evans was the villain in Fast 7. He was the... He played Dracula in Dracula Untold.
Mm-hmm.
He was also Zeus in Immortals, for those who are unfamiliar. The interesting thing... Oh, here's... November of 2013, Norman Reedus apparently was up for the role, which the name was then changed to role of a character named James, and Kristen Stewart was considered for the part of Shelley, which would have been very odd considering she was in a previous one.
She was in a previous one.
Kristen Stewart.
No,
oh, I'm confusing her and Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah, no, Kristen Stewart's shiny vampire.
Yeah, no. So, basically all of this bounces around. Nicholas Holt was rumored to be in it. Jack O'Connell were rumored to be in it. And then August of 2016, Jason Momoa posts an image to his Instagram account of him talking with the director saying, and like the comment was like, you know, finally moving forward. So it looks like Momoa is in talks to star and possibly potentially help fund and get the movie going. September 2016, The Wrap reports that Momoa is cast and filming will begin January of this year.
He's a good choice. I mean, we haven't seen him really act. I haven't seen him, I will say personally, I've only seen him act as in the Throne of Games. But I have a feeling, given the number of roles he's gotten recently, that he's probably got some chops. I mean, we really won't know till he does Aquaman.
I'm not saying he doesn't. My concern is he's 37.
Mm.
Brandon Lee was 28 when he filmed The Crow. Not saying that Momoa doesn't have the chops or the stamina or the build. It's just
he's got one of those faces, though. go throw his name into Google Image, and after,
oh, absolutely,
you know, yeah, he's. I think he could pull it off pretty well.
It'll be interesting.
He's a suave son of a bitch. He'll make the ladies gush.
Oh, I'm absolutely sure of that. I'm not. Again, this isn't about his star power. This isn't about his ability to put asses in seats, as the wrestling kids say. It's more about, I've never envisioned the Crow character as being on that side of the age scale.
Sure.
I'm also saying it's not impossible. If the person who was wrongfully killed and has an axe to grind and rights to wrong is 60, there's nothing that says the Crow, you know, you must be this young to ride this ride. It's just something I had never considered before. I hope it goes good. I would hope it turns out okay, because it would be a shame for somebody who has the reputation of Khal Drogo and who has the reputation, the soon-to-be reputation as Aquaman,
to jump on this fucking freight train to hell that it's been for the last 20 years?
And have it turn out to be bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't know. I guess time will tell.
He's also married to Lisa Bonet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, didn't know that. Anyway. So, have you seen Crow things that we didn't talk about? What about the cartoon where they're in outer space and they have laser swords? What other Crow stuff did we not talk about that you want to hear about? Talk to us on the Facebooks or the Tweeters. That's facebook.com/somethingsomethingcast and Twitter STSDcast. Join the Patreon at patreon.com/somethingsomethingcast, because you can get that for $2 and you get new shit every other week.
Absolutely.
What else do you want to mention?
You can also cover yourself in something. We have a t-shirt website, tfury.com. Put in the search field, something something cast brings you to our fantastic selection of somethingware. Not only t-shirts, but I think there's cell phone cases and laptop cases and mugs and stuff like that. So you can get a whole bunch of cool something stuff. We had a listener, Bill, got one of our t-shirts, posted a picture of it up on the Twitter. We retweeted it out. Some really good stuff.
And there's also vinyl decals over at reallyshameless.com, and 1,000 other vinyl decals. I do those, so whatever you want.
Oh, and I want to give just a quick couple shout-outs. New year. You know, we've been at this for a couple episodes now in the new year. We're going to kind of start back where it all kind of started for us. Two big shout-outs this episode I want to give to Pre-Recorded Live, Matt, Becky, and Joe. Awesome people. One of the first podcasts that we met through the Pottern Family hashtag. Great guys, great show. Definitely check them out. Their Twitter handle, at Prereq Live. And Ice in the Face, another Jersey podcast, Rick and Sarah. Great stuff. We were honored to be on their live YouTube show, Awesome Talk TV. They were on our podcast a couple episodes ago with Theme Song Chris doing cover songs. Definitely, if you're listening to us and you like our stuff, you'll definitely like their stuff. Ice in the Face, pre-recorded live. I also want to give one last quick shout-out. Anime Fan Fest is coming back to New Jersey April 22nd and 23rd this year in Somerset, New Jersey. I'm sure you can check them out on their website. It's probably animefanfest.com. The reason I bring it up is because this show last year was the show where we got to meet our first completely awesome professional-style interview guests of Bonnie and Xander from the Library Bards. We got to meet them live. We got to see them perform live. We got to hang out with them. It was fantastic. They are coming back to New Jersey again. Woo! April 22nd, April 23rd. So if you are fans of The Quest, if you are fans of King of the Nerds, if you are fans of the Library Bards, make sure you check out AnimeFanFest.com. See when the tickets are available. Get yourself some tickets. Get over to Somerset, New Jersey, so you can see these guys in person. They are brilliant. They are funny. They are fantastic. And they are awesome. And they're going to be back here live.
Yep. And it's just as a note, if any of you guys are considering coming out to Anime Fan Fest, we most definitely are going to be trying to make our way out there. If we can get enough of you guys coming, we'll see whether we can, you know, whether we have a meetup or we go to dinner or something. I'd love to hang out with some of you guys, so please let us know.
We actually met one of our awesome New Jersey fans there last year. Fans of The Quest, and we're sitting in the audience waiting for Bonnie and Xander's concert, and they're kind of looking over at us all like shocked and awestruck, and we're like, oh, you know, Bonnie's pretty big over here. And they were like, you're the something guys. And we were like, wait, what? Why, yes, we are. So yeah, we love meeting you guys in person. It would be awesome to get a meetup out there. I know definitively I am going to try to be out there for a good chunk of that Saturday. Not too sure about Sunday, but, you know, irregardless of whether we're going to be there or not, Bonnie and Xander there, come to the show, check them out. If we're there too, I'm sure we will be wearing some sort of apparel to let you know who we are.
Yes, we're not hard to figure out.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Okay. So, with that being said, thank you guys for listening. We will see you guys next week on the Patreon, 2 weeks on this website here. I'm James Hatton.
I'm Podcast Rob.
See you guys later.
Later.